Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
And here's what's happening Tuesday, April 30th, 2019, on this 83rd episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Brady. 83, wow.
83. Brady Wright, Mr. Shane Osborne, and Steve, the producer, Johan, ready to bring you the best automotive podcast in the known world. And before we jump into the show, I do want to let everybody know that Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust has a choice opening for segment sponsors. It is a great opportunity to reach a close targeted audience of car enthusiasts every time the show is accessed. I mean, we share the podcast with over a million listeners every week, and every time we open a segment, why, your business could get put right in front of an audience of over a million, let me say that again, over a million car people. Let us work for you. We can do it. Just imagine, over a million people every week hearing me say, Back to the Blacktop is brought to you by you. Email the show at contact us at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, or message us on Facebook. Now, let's take a look and see what's happening in the automotive world. Steve, what you got?
Well, we got a couple from GM, and GM Motors will build an all-electric pickup, CEO Mary Barrera said Tuesday, confirming a report that first appeared in the Detroit News Bureau in February. The executive declined to provide details about the project, but
of course,
the news took few industry observers by surprise, considering Ford and Tesla have also announced plans to build an all-electric truck. My question is this. Didn't they already have a truck called the Volt? It was like a SUV, and they discontinued it. Now they're going to come back with a pickup?
The Volt was a smaller sedan.
It was not
I'm not aware they made a truck. They were talking about it, but I don't think they ever actually produced it.
But there is actually
it would make perfect sense.
There is a company out there that builds, I want to say, retrofits trucks. My son was
finding
a big pickup, and they've actually got a big charging station on the back, and you can do all sorts of stuff. So
if you have a pickup truck that's powered by an electric motor,
right,
and you have a charging station,
you can run welders off of this thing.
But, I mean, if you have your own charging station, do you have a perpetual motion machine? Do you never have to go to the...
You know, that's kind of interesting.
Because your truck would charge the charging station,
right,
and then the charging station would charge the truck. And then I'm confused.
I know.
My brain hurts.
Well, they've got to create something like that, a perpetual charging machine.
It's the sun.
Well, and another from GM is this. Thanks to cost-cutting and pricey pickups, General Motors has managed to beat Wall Street's earnings expectations for the first quarter of 2019.
Very good for them.
Which is better than, the other guys.
Yeah.
Tesla continues to rack up losses as company announced over $700 million loss during the first quarter. Volvo car sales increase in the first quarter, yet profitability was undercut with higher tariffs, an increase of price pressure in the markets.
Boy, and being a show that emanates from the state of Washington the way we are, we know all there is to know about higher tariffs.
Oh, yes.
It's the tax heaven here, depending on who's collecting.
In Daimler AG, income dropped by double digits in the first quarter as sales of Mercedes-Benz vehicles fell in markets around the world, reducing the unit earnings before interest by 37%.
Yikes.
And Ford Motor Company saw first quarter earnings slide by more than a third. That's 30% during the first quarter. So guys and gals, man, oh man.
Get out there and buy some stuff.
We've been predicting, though, and the industry's been predicting that it's going to slow down.
It's inevitable. I mean, it's always a bell curve.
Boom and bust.
What's going to happen is something new will be released. Somebody's either going to come up with a technological advance, or they're going to let out one they've already been working on, or it's going to be a new model, or. There's always something that
brings
it back.
And I'm telling you, pickups are not going to pick that up. It's
got to
be something else.
No, they can't. There's not that many.
And then speaking of Ford Motor Company, it is facing criminal investigation as the U.S. Department of Justice probes whether it improperly certified the mileage and emissions rating on some of its vehicles.
Yeah.
Didn't they learn from VW?
Well, you know.
Gosh.
It's just, they'll get caught, but we won't.
Oh, man.
Isn't that crazy? You know, you're staking your entire reputation on stuff like that. Why cut a corner? Why do that?
Greed.
Well, yeah, but geez, I mean,
well, speaking
is your reputation worth it? I don't know.
I know. Speaking of reputations, Washington State is about 11 years behind. But good news for Washington car owners, with Governor Jay Inslee signing the Auto Theft Supervision Bill into place. It's bringing back a program that supervises people convicted of car theft and certain property crimes once they're out of prison. Police say these criminals tend to repeat offenders, and they hope this will keep them out of jail. Well, according to the study, it does work, and it's the only, we are the only state in the whole United States that has not used this. For some reason, 11 years ago, they decided to discontinue it, probably because of budgets. And now, with car thefts up, they're saying, let's put this thing back. You know, it makes sense. You put a program and say, let's teach you not to steal cars. Let's teach you how to do something else with your life. It's worth a little bit of pay tax dollars to do that when you consider how much millions of dollars is lost in a car being stolen.
Maybe so, although I'm afraid I'm in the camp where recidivism is almost guaranteed. People who are criminals tend to repeat. It is the rare criminal that is actually rehabilitated. Most of them have a tendency to go back into the system, and good, bad, or indifferent, you know, I'm sure there's lots of ways to solve that, but
there are.
We should have been doing this all along in the attempt to raise that number a little bit, even a little bit.
Well, even a little bit.
Yeah.
And then speaking of number, Amazon is working to thwart thieves by teaming with Ford to make deliveries safer and more convenient for Amazon Prime members, because all these packages being left on people's doorsteps are being stolen in many different locations. So the key by Amazon in car delivery is it will start making deliveries in people's vehicles. They'll just open up, drop them in there, and then lock the door.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm sorry, but no.
Can deliver packages to the shopper's vehicle.
No. No.
I don't think so. Have you seen down the street, there's actually these little lockers?
Yes,
Amazon lockers?
I have seen them, yes.
I live in a nice neighborhood, and I don't worry about that stuff. So
But see, the trouble with that is, here's your fallacy. You live in a nice neighborhood, so you don't
You're
worry
right.
about
it. You're right. It could happen
anywhere. People go to nice neighborhoods to get the stuff because you tend to buy more easily swipeable stuff.
Okay, you're right.
You know,
you're right.
It's, I mean, why are they going to steal from the ghetto? They're not going to do that. You know, they're going to steal from the place where people got money. It's, yeah, I mean, it's terrible, but there it is.
You're right.
And the idea, I'm sorry, this is a minor soapbox for me. The idea that I'm going to give a third party access to my home or my vehicle, because they were originally talking about in-home delivery.
Oh, in-home.
Too. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, right. I'm sure, go on in the house, no worries.
And don't forget to not lock the door when you're getting out.
Yeah, well, and don't worry about my pit bull that's inside. He'll leave you alone.
Oh, and then the lawsuits on that.
Oh, yes. So now they're going to put it in your car. There's just no good way. I'd rather have a third-party vendor with a locker someplace that you could do that. But if you're going to do that, then...
You know, Sears used to be you'd go down and pick it up at the Sears hub.
Well, yeah.
So maybe they're going to start making deals with... Staples or whatever.
Sears isn't using their stores anymore, so
no, maybe they could.
That's a good idea for
some of them.
Becomes a giant self-serve locker.
Oh, my gosh. And if you've been staying with the show for any time of length, you know that Nissan and Renault have been in discussions for possible mergers. Well, it came out today that Nissan has rejected Renault's offer to enter into a merger talks. And good for Nissan. They want to keep it on their own and not be gobbled up by Renault.
And they might not have had a good contract. I mean, the arrangements, you know,
You're
sometimes
right.
those things are really, really complex. It might have worked except for a couple of different points, and maybe they didn't want to, you know, combine logos, or who knows? It could have been any number of things.
Well, and it may come back later and we might see a different thing. And then
walking away from a bargaining table
right.
is a tactic.
It is.
So
it is.
Could be that.
And with all the focus on trucks, it looks like Mitsubishi may be bringing a pickup into the U.S. market fairly soon. And Mitsubishi pickup.
Well, they have them.
They've got them everywhere else.
Offshore, yeah. There's tons of them in South America and Africa.
You know, we in the United States have our big three, and we have a lot of imports. But then I watch a lot of European TV, crime drama and stuff, I see all sorts of cars that we don't have
sure.
over here.
Oh, sure. There's tons of them. A lot of them don't pass EPA. A lot of them don't pass
right.
the safety standards. And some of them, literally, there's a ton of mini cars.
Mini cars are very popular
Europe.
Other places. That's
yeah,
right.
And the you know the wheelbase requirements and the safety requirements are such that, you know, these things are too small to actually pass a crash test.
Oh.
So.
Interesting.
Stuff. Hey, glad to have you with us. Coming up, we get to talk to the owner of Octane Press, Lee Clancher. Some great coffee table books, which we will hold up to the microphone and you can see.
Yes.
Right here on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is back with the Windshield View, and this week we're talking with Lee Clancher, who is the owner and publisher of Octane Press, a publisher of super cool automotive coffee table books. And I want to welcome you to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, Lee.
Great to be here, Steve. Appreciate the invite.
Yeah, no worries. I say automotive coffee table books. You very kindly sent us a couple, and one of them is big enough to be a coffee table all by itself.
It's called Red Four-Wheel Drive Tractors, and what's interesting is the bumper music says, four-wheeling. Going to have fun four-wheeling? Well, my goodness, this thing's Red Four-Wheel Drive Tractors. It's probably a 10-pound book at least, and it's by Lee Clancher. And
tell us what your function there. I mean, obviously you're the publisher. You compile these books. I'm certain you don't write them all because there's an awful lot of author comment or content involved there. So how do all these things come together?
Well, you know, we're pretty unique in that I founded this whole thing because I am an author.
Right.
And so books like that I do a fair amount. I'll put together a team. A book like that, we've got a team of 15 to 20 folks. Depending, they might be researchers, they might be people that are putting together data, they might be other writers, and a few photographers we'll work with as well.
Sure.
I do shoot and write for those books.
Nice.
But we'll have, over the course of our year, we'll have six or eight books, and I might do one of them. And those kind of books, I tend to do one every 2 years because they're, you know, that book is a 3 to 4 year project to put together.
Oh, yeah. It looks really labor intensive. And I mean, they are gorgeous. Let me just say, if I could hold this thing up to the microphone, I would. But we're definitely going to post them on
our
page.
We'll post it on the
Facebook
page. Yep.
These are gorgeous books. And, you know, from a gift standpoint, of course, it'd be faultless, but there's a lot of artwork in these things. You could simply spend a couple of hours just going through the pictures alone, let alone the stories.
And I think one of the things we do really well, and actually I will tell you, for your car people, we have a book on IMSA that is exactly the same size and format. So
nice.
We don't just give the tractor people the big giant books. But one of the things we try to do is not only make them beautiful books with nice photos that you can look at and make them cover all the machines, but we interview, for that book in particular, we interviewed over 100 people.
Nice.
So that we can get the story right from the folks that were there of how these machines were made. Because, you know, I'm a gearhead, I get it. And look, if you're into this, you want to know everything. You want to know, why does it exist? How did it come to be? What were the decisions that, that made it happen?
Sure.
So we try to give you a little bit of say, both worlds, not just a pretty book, but a little more.
Well, the idea of covering the details, and especially the, I don't want to say trivial, but the small, you know, little things that matter in the story. One of our most popular segments on the show is the trivia question. We do one every week, and people love it because it's the little, you know, nitpicky stuff that not everybody knows that makes the whole, you know, hobby a lot of fun. Knowing that stuff and seeing how it came together is just fascinating. Tell me, just as an overview, how long has Octane Press been around? About how many books have you done? And give me some idea of your subject matter.
Sure, absolutely. So Octane Press has been around since October 1, 2010. So we're in the 8.5 year range right now that we've been around. I've been in this industry since 1990-something. I couldn't tell you. I think 1995. So for me personally, I've overseen about 350 books, putting them into publication. For Octane Press, we have, I just literally looked, we were working with a new partner, we have 95 SKUs.
Wow.
Meaning we have 95 different products.
Yeah.
So we've been fairly prolific for a, you know, it's a startup company. We're owned by myself. We're not a big company, but we've produced quite a few books.
Now,
I'm also, I got to add, we just got through a round of awards. We're on our 19th Independent Book Award as
very
well.
Very nice.
So I'm massively proud of that.
Well, you should be. Yeah. Congratulations. That's very cool.
You know, Lee, one of the questions I had is, with these types of books, and these are such niche market books, I mean, tractors and specific, you know, F1 cars and so on and so forth, and you know, you got one about Alaska, Adventure Motorcycles Guide to Alaska, Victory Motorcycles. These are really pitched towards a smaller demographic, but what I have discovered, and maybe this is why you're able to write that, that there may be 10, 20, 30, 50,000 people that are really into a subject, but they are highly into it and they are seeking after everything that relates to that specific passion or hobby or niche. And therefore, is that one of the reasons why you can actually produce these beautiful books and sell enough to yeah, make a little bit of profit?
No, that's absolutely right. And it's really interesting because book selling and the world has changed. So let's go back, say, 15 years. You had to put a book on the Barnes & Noble shelf, and it better appeal to grandmas and cousins and daughters, and it better have a broad appeal or it doesn't work.
Right.
Today, the world you're in, and this has been true for a long time, but there is a proliferation of books. So many you could never read them. So many, it's very, very, very challenging to market them. So our whole philosophy is, let's take somebody who really cares. Let's find that reader that is like, look, I want to know everything about why IMSA is the way it is. I want to know every detail. Let's serve that reader and then use all the tools that are available now with marketing on the internet and enthusiast publications and being able to sell and deliver it on the internet, and serve a very small niche very, very well. And it's feeding my family. It's made a company that works very well. And in some cases better than companies that were trying to make books for grandma, which ultimately some of those books serve you, but ultimately if grandma buys it for you, a lot of times you get it and you go, well, I knew all this. I didn't learn anything. We give
sure.
you a book that takes you deeper. So that is absolutely a business model. It is also one that, for me as a gearhead, is a very satisfying one because I know the books I want, and I can make the books I want.
Sure.
And we can at least eat off that. Books, you know, you're never going to live in a Google mansion, but I can eat.
Well, I think you don't ever go wrong serving a passion. You know,
no.
that person, as you say, wants to know everything, and they will search out the sources that give them the – the infinitely small knowledge, the nitpicky stuff, the thing that you know validates their passion, their you know their love for whatever segment of the industry there are. And it, actually that makes me think of something that I wanted to ask you. Yeah, I mean we have a few books here that you sent us very kindly. What is there any segment of the, and I'm going to use gearhead as the overlord term, is there any segment of that market that you haven't written a book about at this point?
Oh my God. There's a million. I could tell you 10 we haven't served well. This is an endless source. I mean, we have a 384 page book on international scouts.
There you go. Okay.
And it was great. It was a hit. But do we have one on the Jeep yet, or the Bronco, or the Land Rover,
or the Willys,
Toyota Land Cruiser,
or the Nash Metros, or the yeah, sure.
Right. Exactly. I had somebody try to get me to do one on Crosley, and I thought Crosley was a little deep. One of my good friends is a massive Crosley nut, and even that, I was like, okay, that might be too deep. So no, there is no end of niches that need to be served, and book publishers that have been shackled by the old school bookstore model. So
right.
I feel very fortunate. We're like in the Wild West. We can go out and do it and knock it out, and if we do it well, those readers that want this, we can find them, and they get to read it, and we get to publish it, and everybody wins. You know?
That's very cool. Well, so what I'm going to do when we come back, we're going to take a break here in a second. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about some of the niche market, the specialty books you did that you weren't altogether sure were going to make it. So stay right with us. We're with Lee Clancher from Octane Press. Another story from the old Car Nut book is coming up later. We got all that and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Stick with us. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Back in Vehicle City. Yes, we're back with a second half of The Windshield View, and we're talking with Lee Clancher from Octane Press. Just before the break, we were talking about...
The specialty book. The most unusual.
The surprises.
Yeah, the surprises. The ones you weren't sure were going to work.
And so why don't you do that, and then I want to move into the tractor book for a moment.
Okay. Surprises, I would say three stand out. We did a book called Lone Rider recently that was by a woman named Elspeth Beard. She was the first British woman to ride around the world.
Ah.
And it was a wonderful book she wrote. And it's not even really a gearhead book. It's a little more of a semi-romance and also an adventure book. I mean, traveling in the early 60s as a woman alone around the world is quite an adventure. Her photography was amazing. She's this stylish London amazing woman on her bike. And that book absolutely exploded. We picked it up because I liked Elspeth. I liked the book, and I thought we'd sell a few copies. That's been a massive hit over the last year. Very big surprise. Number two would be Victory Motorcycles, only because myself and my co-author, Mike Dapper, who's a buddy of mine from way back, had done a book, and we'd been talking about bringing it back for years. We finally decided to do it. We got everything in place, and Victory pulled the plug, and Polaris decided to make no more Victories. We thought, oh, my God, this is the end, but we still did it. And it turned out that, of course, everybody was so nostalgic about that going away. That was a big hit.
Victory was a very, very interesting story, too. And I think it's great that you published the book. It's just a super kind
of... Yeah, we got a copy here. It's just beautiful.
A bookend to that story.
And you know, there are some amazing, incredibly bright motorcycle people who are very passionate about bikes who made that bike transition from what was a pretty clunky intro
to
a pretty amazing machine that really did, and Harley was ripe for a competitor. Harley hadn't innovated enough. But
and, you know, with
Victory had some incredible motorcycle people that just really did some good work.
Well, they did, and they created an icon. You know, the Vision was such an individualized, stylized kind of a piece of work. There was no middle ground with that bike. You know, engineering was set aside. You know, it was a really well-done piece of work from an engineering standpoint. But, boy, you either loved it or you hated it. There was no middle ground on the styling of that thing, and yet everything worked the way it was supposed
to
work.
Well, and a lot of that has to do with recently passed away Arlen Ness.
Well, sure.
Arlen Ness. Mike Song at Victory was one of the guys behind that bike and many of the others. And really one of those just incredible engineers, designers that was able to create new things in an industry and do it. And frankly, working for Polaris is not an easy road to hoe.
Those guys run things
pretty tight in a business where you just got to spend massive amounts of money to succeed. And that group found ways to not spend massive amounts of money and innovate and create some really neat machines. So
they did indeed.
Absolutely a great story. Absolutely that. But the timing of it just made us go, whoa, I don't know what's going to happen.
That's a gamble.
Nicely, so.
And number three. Number three
would be the craziest one. It's called Around the World on a Motorcycle by Zoltan Kowalski.
Wait, I know this name.
This was written in 1923.
Yes, and I know this name. Okay.
Yeah, and he and his wife were the first in 1923 they ride motorcycles all over the world, and they wrote this incredible travel narrative about it, which was offered to me on we don't have time to go into the wonky circumstances that it came to me. But let's put it this way. I was sort of the last gasp of an old friend of mine saying, God, somebody take this thing off my hands. And we sold it great. People love this book. They love the guy. And I picked it up because it's a wonderful book. And I'm a sucker for that. If somebody comes to me with a great book, I will throw my money at it and figuring it's probably gone. And, to an extent, of course. And this one really surprised us. It's been immensely popular.
You know, that story, I would have read it just for the guy's name. Anybody named Zoltan, he gets 5 minutes of my time, not just on general principles. But what an amazing story. I have seen short versions. I haven't seen your book, but now that I know you have it, I'm going to have to go grab a copy. What a super story and fun, stuff like that you could not do what he did today in the way he did it.
Oh,
it would be a completely different, thing. But what guts.
If you think about keeping that motorcycle going.
Yeah, you had to be a mechanic.
It's just unreal, amazing.
It'd break down someplace and he'd make parts out of old, Chevy stuff and whatever worked, Yeah.
Well, exactly. Duct tape and beer cans. Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and talking about, you know, pioneering, we were talking about a tractor image on your Facebook page. And,
oh, yeah.
And it's featured in your this four-wheel drive tractor book. Talk to us about the whole idea of tractors and the power that tractors have for people that collect, because you were saying something off air, and I want you to pick that up and share that with us.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things is obviously I've gotten pretty deep into the tractor hobby and spent a lot of time with collectors and come to see that the passion for old tractors, I really understand that passion too. And coming to understand how were they engineered, what did they do for the world, I've come to my own appreciation of the tractor, which really, the line I like to use is the tractor built the internet, because without the tractor, we'd all be out in the fields. Steve Jobs and those guys wouldn't have been had time to go in the garage and invent computers. They'd be out in the fields harvesting. So
yep.
That's my little shtick, but what I've come to realize about the people who love them is I'm a motorcycle guy, primarily a rider more than a collector, but I certainly appreciate the vintage stuff and have some of that. But I know how much motorcycles mean to me. And then over the years going to tractor shows and photographing them and meeting collectors, I came to realize that for these people that are passionate about them, these machines weren't just something that was in the garage, something that, you know, I think for a lot of, say, motorcycle or car people, their lives really revolve around it. Their social lives revolve around it. It's very important. But for these guys, it was 8 hours a day, and this machine fed the family.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Kind of bond you form with a machine that, if it works properly and does what it does, you know, you get to eat. I think that's a pretty deep bond. I think that's another level.
It is, and it kind of reminds me of the resurgence of old, let's say, 50s and 60s full-size trucks that were used for hauling and used for utility. You know, we're not talking pickup. We're talking the full-size box trucks and stuff and hauling trucks and things like that. There, again, that was tied to someone's actual living. And there's something about owning an old truck, fixing it up, whether it's a rat truck or one that's been refurbished. And actually, the other day I saw some guy, it was a full-size truck. It was he had a dumper on the back with a full bed on it and wood bed around it and the stake kind of thing and everything. And I think it was like a 60, late 62 or about a 62 or something. And I asked him about it and he said, "Oh, no, it's all original, and I just put a brand-new 350 in it," and he uses it to haul stuff off. I mean, that's his job. He runs around picking stuff up, and I thought, that is so cool, and I've actually seen a lot of that. So, again, that's tying in that history and keeping these machines going.
Yeah, and I think there's something pretty special, too, when you have to know that machine and They get a person, you know, anything older like that gets a personality. So
tractors especially, yeah.
How's it going to start? If it's got this problem, how do I fix it? It becomes, you know, a little bit different than, say, anything modern where you turn the key and it's like a blender and it works. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
It just becomes a different bond.
And not only that, my father-in-law has about two or three tractors on his farm, which actually he inherited from his father. And what I've noticed is most tractors can do many, 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 many different tasks. You attach this attachment, you attach that attachment.
Power takeoffs are brilliant.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, talk about the engineering of running anything from a thrashing machine to a wood splitter to a front scooper, all on the same platform. Amazing.
Well, and to bring it all around kind of in a circle, I mean, I'm a motorcycle guy, I'm a car guy, gearhead guy from the way, you know, from way back. And yet, I was telling Lee off the air that I found at some sort of antique joint a Farmall tractor grill shell, which is a beautiful piece of work that I fully intended to use as the grill shell for my 41 GMC pickup, my rat rod project. And it turned out that I did not. It was too beautiful, and I ended up giving it to Elton Roundhill for, right. from E-Company Customs for some wall art in his shop. But, you know, even the Rat Rod guys love stuff like that because it makes a statement all by itself.
Oh, yeah.
Farmouth, beautiful stuff.
It does. Well, in beginning in the late 30s and the 40s, they brought in all those big industrial designers to redesign
yeah.
tractors.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that grill piece, if it's the one I'm thinking of, was a Raymond Loewy design piece. So there is also some fabulous design. The other thing that I think is fascinating about these old machines is you can take a tractor from the mid-1940s and 50s, and it's still immensely useful on your farm today.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's not that many complex tools that complex that today are still just as useful as they were, you know, 70 years ago.
Sure.
You're exactly right.
I mean, I'm just as useful as I was 70 years ago. Now, almost.
Right. Yeah.
Although there are tools that I use to keep going in the morning.
For my usefulness, but, you know, I think I'm relatively useful.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So tell us what you got coming up. Are there books, are there titles you can talk about that are in the works?
Absolutely. We just signed, I don't know if this is your audience, we just signed a book by the leading ultra endurance athlete in the world.
Huh?
It's called Strasser's Road. We're just about to release that. And that is, these guys race across America. They ride bicycles 3,000 miles in about 10 days.
Wow.
Followed by a truck full of heart surgeons and physical therapists.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible the stuff that you go through. So that's fun.
That's cool.
We have a new adventure motorcycle calendar that's going to be fantastic.
Nice.
You know, I know one thing your readers might enjoy. We have a wonderful partnership with Gunther Rau, who does some fantastic photographs of Ferraris.
Okay.
And he does an annual calendar. He will be this year, I'm hoping I can announce this, I think I can, he'll be doing an exhibition during the Pebble Beach Concourse.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, wow.
And so
just in case you couldn't announce that, we'll deny you said it.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
We didn't hear it.
Never heard it here.
Yeah.
And seeing Gunther and his work is well worth it.
That's super.
He photographs both modern and vintage Ferraris. His work is fantastic. He's an interesting artist, and that should be a lot of fun.
So then what I'm finding out is you actually do calendars as well. That's very unique, and I'm going to look into this because I typically get the ones that come from the auto shop and auto parts place, and they're kind of like
You like the Snap-on tool pinup girl calendars.
No,
We do. You know, I have the equivalent of the pinup calendar for you,
yeah.
Which is, if you're familiar with the website Bike Exif,
sure.
And all the wonderful work they do, which is all custom motorcycles.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been doing a calendar with them since 2012, and you know, as you know, that the work being done by small motorcycle craftsmen over the last decade.
Oh yes, is,
I think some of the finest custom work being done anywhere. It's really become a wonderful hobby or a wonderful niche where a lot of talented people are coming in.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's just a lot of fun.
Well, Keanu Reeves, you know, is putting together a custom bike, selling them. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It starts with an A, Ajax, something like that.
Well, he works with Guard.
He's got a company.
Guard. He works with I know the guy. I know the guy. I interviewed him years ago on a
but
different
it's,
show.
But it's one of those, you know, small small batch, you know, custom motorcycles that's he's one of several that is doing it. I just happen to have seen an article about his.
Arch Motorcycles.
Arch Motorcycles.
I knew it started with an A.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Phenomenal stuff.
It's interesting. There's a lot of celebrity ties to the custom motorcycle movement. So
nice.
Well, you know, we are getting down with our time here, and I think we're going to have this guy back on again.
We'd love to have you back. Yeah. That'd be tremendous because there's certainly no shortage of stuff to talk about.
First of all, where can people go, Lee, to get your get information about your books?
Okay, the easiest place is octanepress.com. But we like to say that our books are available anywhere quality books are sold.
Well, there you go.
Perfect.
Whether you go to a bookstore or Amazon or any of those places.
Super.
Excellent.
We will link it to our Facebook page as well.
Shop, they'll carry it.
All right. Well, we'll link it to our Facebook page as well. Lee, thanks for coming on board. We really appreciate it. We're going to come back in just a minute and talk about our trivia question. So stick close here at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motorwork, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome to Cars Confidential, where you could be the sponsor, where we sometimes call it story time.
Sometimes.
Brady, what kind of story do we have this week?
Well, boys and girls, this week.
Do you like my
That's perfect. Yeah, that's, well, today it's story time.
Oh, yeah.
This is a story from the Old Car Nut Book 2. This one is by a guy named Bill Jackson, and the title of the story is I Never Let Go.
Oh, I thought it was going to be I Shot the Sheriff.
No. That's Eric Clapton. Certainly we could do that. Actually, it's Bob Marley.
Bob
that's
Marley,
okay.
Yes.
So when I was a 12-year-old boy growing up in the San Fernando Valley, I had a dream of owning a hot rod. It was the summer of 1948, and I had bought a copy of Hot Rod magazine and fell in love with one of the featured cars, a 1929 Roadster. I knew that I must have one similar. When the time came to get a car, I found a Track T Roadster body that was set up for a Model A frame. The doors are welded shut. It had been cut down for entry over the top. Now, sadly, this car was never finished, and many of the others that I've owned since have suffered a similar fate. Then, in 1951, my dream car was found in a Canoga Park used car lot. It was a 1932 Ford Roadster. I bought it. I took it to a friend of mine who did body work, and after a few months, we decided the body just wasn't worth the effort to fix. Now, that was kind of a letdown, although I felt that all was not completely lost because it still had the chassis, and I would put a 29 Roadster body on it. Well, my world crashed in the fall of 1951 when the California Fender Law came into effect. This law was not taken lightly by police departments, and driving such a vehicle on the streets guaranteed you a multitude of traffic tickets. My desire to own a fenderless car was still there, but I became a little more amenable to the idea of having fenders on my car because tickets were expensive. In 1952, a scrap collector stopped by my folks' house and sold me a 1929 Roadster body that was for sale in the town of Newhall. When I went there, I didn't care much for the condition of the Roadster, but in an unfinished garage next to it sat a complete 32 two-door Model B that was all in pieces. I bought it. I found that it had been in an accident and the K-member had been bent, but the body had not been hurt, so here was a perfect use for the Roadster chassis. That was until I thought of all the problems of registering a Tudor that was supposed to be a Roadster. Now, In late 53, or early 54 in Reseda, the town where I lived, there was a chopped two-door being sold. I thought this would be the perfect setup, so I bought it. Because my body was in much better condition, so I put it on the newly acquired frame and used my running gear. Registration was now easy. Ha-ha. I installed hydraulic brakes, a dropped axle, big and littles, used the filled shell and King B headlights from the Roadster, and removed the parking lights. The final thing was the addition of an early V8 engine with an extremely radical Winfield cam. Gosh, remember Winfield cams? I drove it to high school in my senior year. In about December 1954, I had stopped at a stop sign. I was accelerating in second gear when I hit a tar patch on a concrete road. One of the rear tires bounced off the road, and when it came down, I lost most of the gears in both the transmission and the rear end.
Ouch.
These were not hardened gears, apparently.
We got a tar-patched street up down 188 that's just awful today.
I was suspicious that it was the rear end that had failed first, so it was time for a stronger one and a general cleanup of the car. In the end, it was not driven again until 2012. That general cleanup took a long time.
Wow.
But I didn't give up on it. In 1955, the car was torn down again to the bare frame, and by now, for the umpteenth time, I painted the running gear white, which was a trend at the time. Then I bought a 1940 rear end, and I had the drive shaft shortened to fit. My favorite car, running around the valley in 1955, was a Deuce Vicky owned by Edward Babcock. He'd not shaved the shell, nor removed the parking lights, and with a louvered hood, amongst other things, had been a kind of a major influence on the way my car looks today. I just recently located Edward through his brother-in-law, and I'd hoped that he had pictures of it, but alas, there are none. So I put the engine of the 32 into a 40 Mercury, and I sold it. Now I was looking for a new engine. A friend of mine had recently built a full-race flathead and had a blown clutch at the Sagas drag strip. And this engine had a C&T stroker kit, made it at 285 cubic inches. And along with this, it was ported and relieved and had Edelbrock heads and a three-carb manifold, along with a good Isky cam, the 400 Junior, and H&C dual coil ignition, aluminum flywheel, and of course, headers. For some reason, he decided to sell the engine, and I bought it. This was to be the engine for the two-door. My daily driver at the time was a nice, clean 40 Ford standard coupe, and every once in a while, the big flathead would find its way into the engine compartment. I was finally working a full-time job, so I turned my attention to making my car a little nicer. The days of white paint were gone. Now chrome was in vogue. I started going to Ford Parts Obsolete on Florence Boulevard in South L.A. almost every weekend to see what had come in during the previous week. I was able to buy all the running gear parts, NOS, and these I had chromed, even the parts inside the brake drums. Everything under the car was chromed. I had no time to figure out what to do with my collection of parts, so they were all given away, including the Hallebrand, the big flathead, shelves of early transmission clusters, a bunch of other 32 stuff. And a few months later, I bought out my ex-wife's equity in the house, moved back in. I was home again, but now not able to afford to work on the car for almost another 20 years. This guy never gives up.
No, he doesn't.
The body was put on a rolling rack. The frame hung on a wall during most of those years, a constant reminder of the unfinished work I'd been putting off. By the end of the 80s, I realized I had to finish it or let it go. I chose to finish it. I'd often thought of moving to the Pacific Northwest, and I believed with the high California home values, I had what I considered substantial equity, and with my meager retirement, I felt that the move was a possibility. However, in 1990, the value of my house dropped $40,000, and it would take years of retirement income to make that up, so I decided to wait it out and continue to work on the car. Initially, I didn't think it could get worse, and I just had to be patient and let values rise again. But by the end of 93, the house had dropped again. So on January 17th of 1994, at 4:30 a.m., life as I had known it changed. The Northridge earthquake destroyed my house.
Oh!
This caused a complete change in plans. Over the next few years, the house problems were finally solved. I moved to Washington State around 2001. The 32 wasn't worked on until 2007, and then I took out a loan on my house in Washington, and I started to think about what to do with the car. I was now in my 70s, with little background in building modern hot rods, but I knew if I tried to learn to weld, paint with the newer materials, and deal with the closer tolerances of high-power engines, I'd be learning on what would become a very expensive automobile. So I found an excellent builder, and I let him and his knowledge finish the job for me. Besides, I just wanted to get it done so I could enjoy it. To the casual observer, my car will probably look like a nicely done, non-period correct, black cookie-cutter 32 two-door. But through the eyes of this once young 12-year-old boy, I see a lifetime dream having finally come true. Thanks to all my many friends for their help and encouragement throughout the years, I never let go of the dream because I never let go of the car.
Wow.
Man, that's a story. That's a lifetime of
fooling
with
story.
That. Man, I feel like I have a little bit of kinship with that because I've told the story before. I still own the first vehicle I ever bought when I was 15. Now, it's a Lambretta motor scooter. And
right.
It runs because it's a Magneto, so I could start it up, you know, tomorrow if I cleaned the gunk out of the carburetor. But it sits in my garage as I speak, and I will never sell it. I'll die with the thing.
Right.
In fact, maybe I'll have it buried with me.
Buried with you.
But I've had offers, you know, people would like to buy it because it's in great shape. It just, you know, is old.
Wow.
But yeah, I will probably never let that vehicle go. So I have some kinship with this guy, and it's a terrific story. And like all of the stories in the old Car Nut books, you know, they're all available on Amazon. You can also get them at theoldcarnutbook.com. David Dickinson has always been just a prince for letting us read those stories on the air. And he's got three books in the series. I keep pugging him to get that fourth book out.
He needs to leave a legacy.
He
needs to do that.
Got to do it.
You know, speaking of legacies, Hemi's car of the day that I found interesting is a 1961 Dodge Dart Phoenix two-door coupe. A Dart Phoenix coupe.
Wait, I don't remember these.
Very interesting. Go over there to Hemi's and take a look at it. But this got me to thinking about when did Dart first come into production? And Dodge Dart.
Yeah. Gosh. I'm stumped. I don't know the
1958.
Answer. 58, okay.
And it ran through till 1976.
It was always a compact.
Yeah.
You couldn't.
I mean, the 61 Dodge Dart Phoenix two-door coupe is not a compact, but maybe according to...
Well, by those definitions
yeah. It was probably, but...
Well, the Malibu was a compact.
That's true.
You know, it wasn't a full-size car.
Right.
So the Dart probably looks big by today's standards, but
that's probably it. It looks big by our standards.
Compared to a Coronet or something, I'm sure it was smaller.
Yeah. Well, compared
that's
to a Coronet.
That's just fascinating. Yeah, well, it anything is. Smaller. An aircraft carrier is small compared to a Coronet.
But anyways, I thought that was very interesting.
That is. What did they want for it? I forgot you said.
Well, I didn't get that because I just wanted to go off on the idea of when Dodge Darts actually first appeared in. I didn't realize it was a 58.
Yeah,
so
still cool.
Well, stick around. And we've got more of the weekly trivia question coming up next and a plug for next week's show. Put it in park, stick around. We got a lot more for you.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man, only.
Hey, welcome back to Around the Wheel, where you get to hear about upcoming events and the weekly trivia question. And Steve has a couple of new car-related TV shows. What do you got?
Yeah, well, the first one is called Formula One, Drive to Survive. It's a Netflix original show.
Ah.
its first foray into racing documentary. I think it's like five episodes, and it's very interesting.
Cool. I like those short format ones, you know, 5-6 episodes, because they get they do some details, like a miniseries.
Right. Matter of fact, I just got through watching one. It was a crime drama from Spain. It was like 5 episodes, maybe 6, and it wrapped up. Boy, talk about a little zigzag at the end you didn't see coming. I went, wow, that was well written.
So the Formula One, and then what's...
And then the other one is called 7 Second Love Affair, and on Amazon Prime. It dives deep into the lives of its subject. It will highlight the life of Rick, the Iceman Stewart, and his adventures behind the wheel of a top fuel dragster in 1965.
Oh, nice.
So
thought for a minute it was going to be autobiographical.
Yeah.
Story of my life. Well, that is very cool.
I love seeing this kind of stuff.
The early days of drag racing was just, it was, man, it was all guts and glory at that point.
Yeah, it was.
Super. Well, that's cool. Well, the trivia question this week was kind of an interesting one. It was a little complex. We did not have a winner.
No.
And maybe it was my fault because I thought it was very cool. But what it was, in 1934, Cadillac debuted the V16 motor in a model of car that was named after a famous film. Harley Earl was the stylist, and he liked this film so much that he designed the car and named it after the film. And so this is pretty esoteric. And apparently nobody wanted to delve that deep into Google to find out what it was. But the name of the car was the Madam X.
And Madam X.
Yeah, if you go back and look at the 1934 Cadillac Madam X. It's very swoopy. It's a neat looking car. But the film was a film noir back in the day, and Harley liked it, and that's why the car was named after it. So no worries. We won't give away the coveted bucket of barn find dust this week, but maybe next week we will. Here is the question for next week. What car? This is going to be a great one. What car company started out German, but ended up French? You'll never get this.
Wow.
The car company started out German but ended up French. If you know, you can send us an email at contactus@horsepowercromeandrust.com. You could also send us the answer on the Facebook page or message me on Facebook, either way. And you too could win the coveted bucket of genuine horsepower chrome and rust barn find dust, which, of course, obviously, you know, you put on your vehicle and people think it's a barn find and it's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars easily.
Some, you know, we send out these these awards and you know, somewhere down the road, we'll have to produce some stickers or something.
This is going to come back and bite us. I know it is.
Yes, it will. The people will actually slap
those.
We're
sitting right next to the thing right now.
I know. I'll have to take a picture of it, make it into a sticker. And
there
then
we are.
People who win, they can put it on their car.
We'll make dash plaques.
Dash plaques or stickers.
Hey, reminder, Horsepower Chrome and Rust, we still have a couple of openings for new sponsors. It's a great opportunity to reach a really, really super audience of car people who are listening right now, we hope. We do share the podcast with over 1 million listeners every week. Your message gets directly to them. If you got a business that caters to car people, let us work for you. Email the show, contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com or message us on Facebook, and we will show you how cool it can be to be a sponsor of the show. We got a couple of new sponsors coming up, too, so stick with us and you'll hear them first.
Well, yeah.
Someplace
and,
close
you know,
to
we,
us.
You know,
and next week, by the way, Shane will be back. He wasn't here today because he's building
actually
a brand new...
he's going to be gone for a couple weeks.
Isn't he coming back next week before he leaves?
No,
oh.
I think he's going to California.
He's going to California to bring back a giant trailer full of car parts.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is he's going to go see...
He's bringing me back the back end of a 34 Ford, I think.
Wow.
But I don't know. It depends
on
whether
he's got car stuff stashed everywhere.
This is a guy who has like secret rabbit holes full of car stuff.
I know a biker that does
all
the same
the
thing. All over the country has vintage bikes parked all over the place.
Yep.
Well, Greg, you know who you are.
That's right. Well, that's our cue to hit the gas until next week. Thanks to Lee Clancher from Octane Press for giving us a ton of gift ideas. You can check him out on Facebook. Thanks for liking and following our website and our Facebook page. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright, saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we'll give you the pro stock version of another Horsepower Chrome and Rust. That probably hurt.